With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Marek Larwood.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Marek Larwood.
Marek's been learning French.
Oui, beaucoup de français.
I don't speak a word of it. I don't know.
Do you not actually speak French?
No, I didn't do it at school. I did German at school, but I was equally terrible at that.
I really like found something you're not good at.
Oh, you wish
like
me Schoen ill.
Freuder.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get straight to the films.
The films, all right. You've been to the cinema.
I went to the cinema, and I went to see Woody Allen's latest film.
Is it a return to form, which is what people say after every Woody Allen film?
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah.
It is a very good film. It is like Blue. It's called Blue Jasmine. It stars Kate Blanchett.
Yep, she's very good, isn't she?
Blanchett.
Well, if going back to your French, it'd be Blanchett.
Blanchett.
Yeah.
She's very good. She almost looks like a beautiful alien, isn't she? She's quite alien.
Yeah,
that's why she got cast in Lord of the Rings.
Yes, got an ethereal quality, like Tilda Swinton, but like the good Tilda Swinton to Tilda Swinton's evil.
Tilda Swinton is more alien than Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, she's sort of off-puttingly ethereal.
But she almost caught that Tilda Swinton, I think. Anyway, Kate Blanchett plays... It's essentially... I keep on saying essentially. It's one of those words people start saying, like basically or essentially or literally.
Virtually.
I'm saying it constantly. It's a character piece following Kate Blanchett, who her relationship with her husband has broken down. Formerly, she was rich, sort of socialite, who lived in a luxurious lifestyle with her husband, who had lots of businesses, and his son from a previous marriage. Now she's had to move in with her sister after her poorer sister, who they're both adopted.
Who plays her sister?
Her sister is played by an actress.
Good choice. Good choice.
Actress's name is not coming up. It's Sally Hawkins.
Oh, Sally Hawkins.
She's very good.
She was in my play, the one before the one you were in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She English?
Yeah. She started out in sketches, sketch stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, she's from Maid in Dagenham.
Yeah. She's the lead in Maid in Dagenham. She's in all sorts, All or Nothing. And
I didn't even know she was English in this. She was incredible. Yeah.
She's very good.
And so Kate Blanchett moves back in with her sister, played by Sally Hawkins.
Right.
And her sister's new boyfriend, and has to get accustomed to a much poorer lifestyle. On the face of things, it doesn't sound... I've not given it the best description.
I get where it's going. It's sort of like a posh fish out of water.
Yeah, it's a fall from... It's the study of a character's fall from grace and how they deal with that breakdown. Always when I go and see a Woody Allen film, I worry it's going to be really self-referential.
Yeah.
There's only one instance when they start talking about what's happening. You know, I sometimes feel like this. They're talking about what's happening at the moment, how the characters are feeling. Really, it's his sort of signature piece, really.
Does it work in the mouth of anybody else, do you think, in his films?
I don't think it does, but But that's what's good about this film. We didn't do that.
Yeah, because I remember watching Matilda and Matilda, which I think is the one that's all done, sort of narrated by a conversation being had with Wallace Shawn in a restaurant. And he's basically just describing what you're supposed to be thinking and feeling whilst watching this. And it's an obnoxious way of telling a story. It's really irritating.
It was interesting the first time we did it in sort of Manhattan Annie Hall.
But when it's him, it's fine because it is authored. It feels more coherent.
Well, I think he stopped doing that from his last Midnight in Paris. I really enjoyed as well. This was great. I mean, hats off to the... it's like an acting showcase. And I think we've talked about who's going to be up for the sniff of the Oscars. I think Cate Blanchett's got to be up there for this. At the very start of it, I thought, oh, is she too over the top? She plays a really... it's great seeing the lead, an unlikable lead. What's the word when you're
an anti-hero.
Yeah. And she's a bit like that. So it's fascinating to watch characters. And Woody Allen's great at his best when he's putting together people who don't necessarily fit.
Yeah.
And having awkward moments. All the characters are fully rounded. It's about the difficulties of someone's life falling apart, and it's essentially the question of, do you choose wealth above anything else, and the sacrifices you make, and the moral of it is someone losing out because they don't trust their instinct and go what they love. They just go after wealth and fame and fortune. It reminded me a little bit of an ex-girlfriend of mine, but I wouldn't go into that. A really entertaining film. Really entertaining. It's good to go to cinema for an hour and a half film, hour and 40 minutes for a rather than these. Every film seems to be 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, unnecessary, usually because they're fat.
Yeah, it's normally, I don't know, for you listeners, it's 30 minutes of trailers.
Yeah.
Adverts, including the worst Kevin Bacon advert, which get worse every single time I go to cinema.
Poor Kevin Bacon.
In the film. Yeah, so I would recommend this. I think for Francesca Scalici, one of our listeners recommended it.
Ah, great. Okay, so I didn't know it was a recommendation. I would have maybe gone and seen it. Because Woody Allen, we've talked about him before, and we've had several guests on who have brought him up of their own volition as well as guests who brought along Woody Allen film. I think Izzy Sutty brought along a Woody Allen film back in the Absolute Radio days.
And Josh Howie did as well.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, he's a popular one, and he still remains so, but he has sort of... I mean, I joke about it, but everyone does say it's a return to form with every film because it's sort of so widely known how duff his films were for a while.
Well, when I think of Woody Allen films, and went to cinema, I think I would no way... The only reason I watched this, because the choice was this or The Fifth Estate, and I looked on IMDb to see what... And the Fifth Estate was 5.8, and this was 7.8. So I went with trusted people on IMDb.
Wow. IMDb is an interesting one because it's got Metacritic on there as well now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because it used to just be people who wanted to post a review on IMDb, and that is not a reliable thing of anything, because the only people who will are people who give everything 10 or people who want to destroy things. So it's, you know...
Can you explain what Metacritic is?
Metacritic is an amalgamating website that goes... combines into a percentage score all of the reviews that it can find from legitimate sources. So, you know, we're talking, you know, The Telegraph or The Independent or Empire Magazine or New York Times or whatever, and amalgamates them into one score, so overall what it got. So a high Metacritic score usually means that critically, it does mean critically, it was very well received. Breaking Bad, the final episode, I've been told, which I've not got to yet, but... apparently was the highest rated piece of television ever on Metacritic in terms of critical response, which I'm looking forward to because it's very hard to end one of those American series because often they don't know where it's going.
That's why I've stopped watching them.
Yeah. Because they... Yeah. Anyway. I'm glad. That's good.
It was really... And interesting enough, the people who went... I went on a Monday, so at the Odeon Monday, you get 25% off.
Yes. So it's only £28, isn't it?
Yes, it was only £2,000 with overpriced popcorn. But it was full of quite a lot of pensioners.
Going to Woody Allen film.
Yeah, my Odeon Muswell Hill, which is my local cinema,
yeah,
as I regularly go to, I know probably the exact... It's normally 10 people or less whenever I go there. I don't go on Friday or Saturday, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Just during the week, just go during the week.
Well, it's nicer, isn't it? I mean, if you're not in an area that people tend to respect the film, you know, because if you go, certainly, I live in Camden, and often the clientele there are just sort of going there to hang out, really. They've heard that it might be all right, and they'll just talk and, you know, wander about, and that rubs off on the staff, who often won't turn the lights off, or, you know, it's terrible.
Muswell Hill has got very good clientele. Always go to cinema during the day.
That's true, I agree.
I think the Curzon's got very good clientele as well.
Oh, brilliant. And the Prince Charles, similarly. Good fun.
So, moving on. So, I recommend that. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great...
How many Marics?
8 Marics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, really good character piece. Really good, good acting. And you can just watch. You don't need the flashy stuff. You just need to have great characters working together, and that they're good to watch. It did sag a little bit occasionally, and I felt like the narrative wasn't really. It's not really it's like a section of someone's life rather than the film. And what was interesting, they jumped around in time.
Okay.
So they showed Cate Blanchett's life before. And they'd have different segments of their lives, what happened, and cut back and forth. And that worked really nicely.
Did they do it with haircuts?
No. You knew what happened, but it jumped around the narrative that showed. It wasn't a set timeline for the narrative. It worked really well.
Okay.
Oh, that was nice. Well done. So, well done, Woody Allen. Carry on making it. You're allowed to make one more film.
He's getting very grumpy, isn't he?
Is he? I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that. You know,
a lifetime working in the film industry trying to get the thing you want to make made must drive you up the wall.
You see the people who don't get work.
Yeah, I know.
They're twice as grumpy.
At least he's Woody Allen.
Yeah, he gets to make pretty much what he likes, really.
He does.
Thanks to people, the French like him, don't they?
They do, they do. A continued critical success really does help you in terms of getting what you want made. That'll come up again, actually, later on in the podcast. Well, Blue Jasmine, go check it out. 8 Marics.
Meanwhile, talking at IMDb.
Yes.
I posted something on my Facebook page, which I've got a link to something else. They've got this list. So one of these list things, I can't remember what it is. It allows you to go through the IMDb top 250 films of all time.
Yes.
And see how many you've watched.
How many did you get?
I got 188.
That's bloody good.
Well, that was last week. What did you get?
I got 158.
And we both agreed the same thing, didn't we?
We did, that we needed to watch more Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. But there's quite a few Chaplins up there on the list, and I think 2 Keatons, Buster Keatons. But every time I got to a Chaplin, I was like, oh, I wish I'd see more of this.
There's about 7 or 8,
aren't
there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think I've always seen bits of his, but I've never sat down and watched.
I'm exactly the same. I have never sat down and watched one. And I've seen one Buster Keaton before, which is The Navigator, which is about him on a boat, which I thought was incredible. Because if we've ever complained about not being able to see the action because of jump cutting in the modern, you know, style of music videos, usually because they've got a big Hollywood star who isn't very good at the action, so they're jump cutting around it so it doesn't look lame. Back in the day, their only option was to stick a wide-angle lens on it and have someone incredible do something for it. And that is such a breath of fresh air.
What happened this week is that we watched...
We watched... probably the 2 most critically acclaimed films, one from each of them. So we've watched Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times, which is 1937?
36, I think. I think it's 36. Well, I think that's pretty good. I'll give you 1937.
It's, 36, you're right. And Buster Keaton's The General, which is 1927.
26.
Oh, what's wrong with me? I went from the UK release, clearly.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So a decade apart, but certainly of a sort of genre, definitely. I mean,
the first thing you have to say, touching back on what you just said,
yeah,
is they were incredible, both of them, weren't
my
they?
My God, you just sort of, the mind boggles that if you were actually on set watching it happen, you'd worry for their lives constantly. Like, their pratfalls and things, they must be so bruised after a day's shooting. It's Or not. Maybe not. Maybe they're so good at it. I mean, which should we talk about first? Because I don't want to go back and forth.
We do Modern Times first.
Modern Times. Okay, so 1936, Charlie Chaplin film. Quite tragic, actually, this one. But it's. Shall I tell the story of this one, and then do you want to
do...
Charlie Chaplin's playing his little tramp character again, who works in a factory. It's all about industrialisation and the industrialisation of society, really. But and about Depression-era America. So he works in a factory, but he's a clown and he gets stuff wrong, and then he gets fired, and then accidentally ends up at the front of a communist rally, and so ends up in prison, and then it keeps going and going and going at such a pace. But he meets a orphan girl who is lost on the streets, and they form a friendship and end up sort of... helping each other out in their lives as they go along. It's very sweet. So, I mean, that's it. It's a Charlie Chaplin, from what I'm led to believe from clips I've seen, in that it's sort of set-piece comedy routines, you know, very, very reminiscent of the Marx Brothers or Buster Keaton.
I felt when I was watching this, I don't know what impression our listeners have. You've probably watched it, listeners watching more than me. My impression going into this... thing is just seeing clips on YouTube and bits of sort of all merging them all together, you know, merging what's something they call Lauren Hardy, and slightly just slightly lame, annoying,
the Three Stooges thing,
and annoying jokes. This is actually this is a classy bit of physical comedy,
hugely so.
And one thing that annoyed me is I don't particularly like I don't think it's aged well, that Chaplin character, the looks and the
I find him. I find when he's doing sort of anything other than sort of naive clown innocence, he looks a little creepy.
Oh,
but,
do you?
Yeah, I just, when he smiles at people or whatever, I don't believe it quite so much. But
okay.
But when it's in the wide and everything, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I mean, physically, I've not seen anything like it.
There's a bit. It's a famous. Bit of when they're he's just tightening screws. He's starting off in the factory, and you've got the factory line, and his job is to tighten the screws in the factory thing. And I've done we both work in comedy, and I've done quite a lot of physical stuff. I was watching him purely as someone who admires that technique. I'm a big fan of people like Michael Crawford and people like that.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that he's had to move to carry on doing it for so long, and it takes a long takes.
Yes.
Where
and
all
just
of the
conveyor belt of things is going
all of
past.
The other actors, it's so the choreography of them is so precise. You don't see that because of the nature of the filming.
I was exactly the same, just marvelling at the technique of when he misses one and it goes down the line and he ends up going, having to catch up after getting distracted. He always picks the correct one each time, as in even though he's had to take his eye off it for the choreography,
actually hitting the. I know he's probably not doing it, and the film's degraded. And, it just looks
it's amazing.
It looks so precise.
And so fun. Like the bit where he gets sucked into the machine and suddenly he's going up and round. It looked like a Terry Gilliam animation or something. But it was real. It was real. You know.
I think they're held in such high regard because they're the influence so much. And this film is where it's not just about, I thought it would just be pratfalls and jokes.
Yeah.
And that what put me, I thought I can't sit through an hour and a half of that. That'll get exhausting. It was actually, I think it's been picked at the time. Wasn't particularly well received, was it?
No, it was well. I'm not sure about Modern Times. I know the General wasn't.
I think it wasn't. It was. I think that neither the word, but this went on to become one of his most respected films. But it just says so much about it. It's as a piece of social commentary.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Well, this is the interesting and slightly tragic thing: is that it was this film. And not The Great Dictator, but this film that convinced the Houses Un-American Committee that Chaplin was a communist, which he staunchly wasn't. But, you know, it was McCarthyist era. They were, you know, it was witch hunts all round. So he would have probably been the biggest star at the time, I would have thought. Mm. He's British, but he was the biggest star in Hollywood. When he went to promote Modern Times in Europe, I think it may even have been Britain, they barred his re-entry to the States. And that was it. So this was the last film he made over there. And it was going to be his first proper talkie film. Mm. And he decided against it during the thing. So there is some talking in it, which is all pre-recorded stuff. Anything that's on a gramophone or, you know, equivalent is actual voice, and everything else is the plates going up saying what they're saying in the old silent movie style. But apparently this is the last film to ever do that, so it's the last film of the silent era as well, and they banned him from America after it. So it really is, that silent movie's over, the biggest star of silent movies gone. Really sad that he didn't get to do any more.
And what is incredible is how it is, it doesn't, it feels relevant now, those issues of poverty and even I think all my friends, we talked about this before, we talked about in terms of the way that houses and people's lives are depicted in films. Socially, especially in London where we live and there's lots of actors and stuff, everyone's getting poorer and poorer and getting pushed out. No one can, everyone's living in tiny, tiny flats.
Well, it's what happened no one's in
got,
all that. Yeah.
No one's got a garden. No one's, everyone's trying to get on a housing ladder and they can't afford anything other than the... basically a box somewhere.
Well, not to get too much into the sort of depressing facts and figures of it, but I was looking at a thing recently, today, this morning in fact, that in America the difference between poor and rich is so different to how it's ever been. Like the top 1%, as you know, has now become a catchphrase, but owns about the same wealth as the bottom 40 combined. And it's unbelievable. It's, you know, and this is, it is relevant. But, you know, to be then branded a communist because he believed that that was wrong, that they believed there was no middle ground between pure socialism and, you know, pure capitalism. It's very odd, very odd. But no, I think it is only going to remain relevant every time that, you know, people get hit hard financially.
Yeah.
It's a great film, absolutely great film.
And also one scene I really loved, so simple, it's just he gets a job as a night watchman. I mean, you can say spoilers because this film's 82.
yeah
it's even gone past the copyright infringement, isn't it? So it's one bit when he's roller skating in an apartment store, and he's just avoiding getting close to the edge when he's blindfolded, but the way he roller skates,
sublime, isn't it?
It just looks like a great ice skater. I could watch him and I thought, I actually, when you watch someone doing something and they're brilliant at, you instantly want to go and try it. But seeing him roller skate, I thought, just do the whole thing on roller skating.
The one
so
I,
magical.
The one I thought was so incredible, where I just go, you know, I've seen sort of parkour people do something similar, but never comedically and funny, is the one where he dives off a little jetty into a lake, and it turns out to be really shallow. So he's actually dived hands first into this thing and then hit the rock immediately and then done a pratfall and just like, it's just, the very idea of trying to replicate that myself terrified me.
Where's that?
Just diving head first towards solid ground.
You've got the stories, you've got the stuff that, like, elements of this have been, you've seen silent film and like The Artist, but like Jackass is the early elements of doing that.
Which
just separated and made more extreme. But
less skillful as well. In Jackass, it's the very fact that they're sort of naive and not good at this. They're just throwing themselves into danger is sort of the appeal, whereas this is a real craft.
I think you. Harking on about the same thing, you go back to how talented they were because they're limited by how they filmed things, so they had to be talented. So the good news is, it's on YouTube.
Yes, for free. It's public domain, is it, these days?
I think it is, or one, I don't know, but I'm sure it must be.
Yeah, it seemed to be legit copy that we watched anyway. But no, I thoroughly recommend it. Modern Times, it's always rated as one of the top films of all time.
Yeah, I think it should be. I was watching I was quite a sceptical when I went to watch it, but I did really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Should we talk about The General?
The General. Okay, so 10 years earlier, in the height of his the peak of his career, actually, Buster Keaton, who came before Chaplin, and was the big dog at the time, I guess, he made this film about the American Civil War. It's based on a true story, and it's about a train engineer on a train simply called The General, whose train is stolen by the North in order to go down the track and basically destroy signalling posts and bridges and all sorts as they go along in order to help their invasion of the South. So, interestingly, you know, revisionist history and all, Buster Keaton, the hero Buster Keaton, is on the side of the South. And so it's basically one long routine based on and around a train.
It's a train chase film.
Yeah, train chase, which hasn't been done for a long time, apart from The Lone Ranger, which tried it recently. I didn't bother going to see it. Yeah, incredible. Again, just like phenomenal what they're doing with
this.
What
a film. I was surprised, because I watched Modern Times, I was pleasantly surprised. Buster Keaton, I think we should maybe talk about the differences between... I'm a big fan of Buster Keaton.
Me too.
And just look at some of the stuff he does. Just put him into his greatest tricks into YouTube and look up the stuff he's...
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the pranks he's done or the set pieces he's done are incredible. This wasn't as sort of jokey as those. It's more of a story as well, like Modern Times. More of a narrative. So it wasn't a big, sort of hugely comic film.
No, and it was commercially not a success either, because it was deemed at the time neither a comedy nor a drama. And the thing is that Buster Keaton was the most proud of it out of all of his films, because it doesn't need to be a pure genre piece. It's about something, and it is funny at the same time. And this was actually... It didn't bomb at the box office, but it didn't make enough money that this was the last film, like Modern Times with Charlie Chaplin, this was the last film that he got to call the shots, got to do what he liked. So after this film, he was forced to sign a sort of golden handcuffs agreement with MGM, and he didn't make anything quite so good again.
But there's something about his face which I find incredible.
Yeah. He looks so dour, doesn't he? He's almost like Edgar Allan Poe or someone.
He's great. He's got these huge big eyes, which he's got with his eyeliner on.
Yeah, yeah.
Long nose. He doesn't ever... There's no real smiling. It's him looking... I can't put my finger on... What is the expression you'd say he pulls? Just...
It's a grave expression, isn't it?
Sort of quizzical look. I don't know. There's a sadness to it as well.
Yeah. It's like he's just seen a really sort of dramatic car crash.
But he's so watchable. I love. I can just watch his face, let alone what he does.
He's like the Rolling Stones to Chaplin's Beatles, isn't he?
Yeah, I do think that's... he's cooler. But oddly enough, Chaplin's more...
Pop.
He's more sort of well-known.
Yeah, yeah,
Wouldn't... If you did that as a show on television called Pointless, where they get to name... Ask 100 people to name someone, I bet 99 out of 100 people could name Chaplin.
Yeah.
Whereas Buster Keaton, you're looking about...
Yeah.
10 people.
And then Harold Lloyd, even fewer.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the general, it's... I mean, just him running around that train and do... Like, there are stunts where you go, that was just him doing it. And if he hadn't done it, something terrible would have happened.
But it looks beautiful. You've got these beautiful... I mean, you do realise that some of the shots they have a huge budget for.
Yeah. It was 750,000, I think, at the time. Which is, if you think, is 1926, it was $750,000. And I think it took $1 million. So that's why it was deemed such a failure.
But him just on a train cutting out wood, in the background you've got these hordes of the North armies.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in the, he's not even noticed them, going past in the field. Some beautiful shots.
I've read about that as well. You probably read the same things. But he had, I think it was 500 extras in total, who were all, actual military men, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But he had them go past the camera dressed as the armies from the North, then go around the camera, change costume and go in the opposite direction as the armies from the South. So it's the same extras going around.
It's great. I mean, you can watch this on YouTube, and you can watch it and do change your YouTube settings to 720. I always put it...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's a lot clearer and a lot crisper.
Now, this one is public domain because, and I read about this, they forgot to renew it. They forgot to renew their copyright, and so it passed into public domain. Later on, I think like in the 70s or something, a guy recut it and then copyrighted the recut version.
Oh, okay.
So, but you can still get the original for free.
And what about the score, though?
Yeah, great. Great original score. It sort of evokes lots of sort of American tunes at the time, but they're not quite the same. They're sort of minor keys and missed notes. And
that's all the way through. You've got like an hour and a half of this classical music, which is brilliant. I was annoyed with myself for not having what, like, everyone, and I put this IMDb thing on Facebook, and loads of people shared it, and everyone said the same thing. Oh, Chaplin, don't watch any Chaplin. Because we've all got, or Buster Keaton, all these silent films, we've all got these preconceived ideas.
Yeah. My preconceived notion about that era would be that they'd be so slow by today's standards, and they're not.
Yeah.
Like, the pace in both these films, it just ramps on. And what you were saying earlier, they are both round about 90 minutes. I think Modern Times is 1 hour 27, and the General goes just over the one and a half hour mark. But yeah, they're tight films.
Mm.
And the final sort of battle in the General as well is, like, it's enormous, the scale of that thing.
Really great. So also, I've pushed the number of films I've watched to 190 now.
Well,
I haven't watched those two.
If I count The Hobbit, which I didn't really want to because I didn't think it should be up there in the top 254, but if I count it, then I'm on 161.
There's also someone, James Cook, sent in, who's a great comedian, sent in a link to a thing called framerater.co.uk.
Okay.
Where you can rate your films and share those ratings with other people. So an IMDb doesn't do that, but I think Framerater, it might be one website too many for me, but it's a way of just, if you want to share with your friends what film you think is good.
Yeah.
I might do that and go through, I've been rating every single film I've watched this year, and go through to and see if you agree with me on those films. Or not.
No.
My computer ran out of battery, so I can't check that letter.
Oh, never mind.
But someone wrote in about the film. Oh, we're going to change subject now. Let's finish off talking about this.
Yeah. So, yes, I mean, I would recommend anybody catch them these films, because they're just such an intrinsic part of cinema as well, cinema history. Just they're clearly informed so many people who've come later, who've pored over these films and loved them, that you can... Like, there's so many shots, I thought, in Modern Times that have influenced Gilliam's Brazil, for instance.
Mm.
That it's just, yeah, really nice to see.
I just think they're good films. Just watching one, they're three good films on YouTube that I'm annoyed that I haven't watched before.
Yeah.
So I thought, Chapman's going to be annoying, and that's going to be rubbish because it's old.
Well, I'm going to watch The Great Dictator now, because I've seen his speech from the end where he finally speaks, and he speaks out against fascism, Chaplin. And The Great Dictator was before Modern Times, and probably started the very idea of speaking out against fascism. He was probably a communist. But also the ending of Modern Times, where he, for the first time, sings something. So he's Chaplin actually making a noise, but it's all in gibberish. So it's a nice little end to his silent movie career as well, even though he's spoken in Great Dictator. But anyway.
Two great films. I'll tell you what, though. What's coming up on October 29th?
That is Film Fandango Live, the quiz.
Yeah, and what's happening then?
Well, we're going to do a live event for everyone to come down, and we're going to have short films and prizes, and it's going to be great. It's at The Forge in Camden on the 29th of October.
If you want to contact us, how can you contact us?
You can email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Go on our Facebook page, where all the details of the live event are as well, /filmfandango, or tweet us, @filmfandango.
But I want to give us some money for this podcast. It's free, and I think I should help them out, because it costs lots of money, right?
Well, for God's sake, Marek, go to filmfandango.co.uk and press the donate button, and then just type in £4,000.
Or more. Great.
Well, we'll be back next week.
Keep watching
the films.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.